go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 125 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. I had a dilemma a few nights ago. I was doing stand-up, and this is kind of... I've come to terms with this is what Verbal Graffiti, the project, is I go out into the world. I do stand-up at a venue where hardly anybody's at. There is something there that perturbs me. And instead of being a real man and addressing the issue or the concern in person, I scour. I come back here in front of the camera, and I talk shit behind people's back. And do so in a very passive aggressive way. I guess that is very 2025 Zoomer like. I'm not going to address someone in person. What kind of crazy? Have we talked about this before? Where I firmly believe that talking shit behind somebody's back is the most polite thing you can do for that person. Because what is the alternative? To talk shit to the person eye to eye? That is called being rude, inconsiderate, and I don't want to be those things, and I don't want to get punched in the face. So I come here, and that's the project. I talk about what I'm too fearful to talk about in person, in front of the people that are aggravating me. Anyway, so I'm doing stand-up, a small show, small crowd, intimate, had a very lovely time, had an okay set, not great, but... Yeah, you know, I didn't go home listening to The Cure. Let's say that. So the host, I loved the venue. It was a coffee place. I got pour over coffee. It tasted lovely. The one flaw with pour over coffee is that it's the temperature is never as high as I like my coffee. It's not hot. Yeah, it's higher than warm, lower than hot. It's spring. The temps are in my coffee, pour over coffee, the flavorful, lovely, down the gullet, enjoyed the taste, but it was spring. It didn't burn my tongue. And I like summer. I like my coffee to be heat wave, sauna. This complaint does not pertain to the coffee. Coffee at this venue, lovely, go there. I'm not going to say the name of the venue because... I have some complaints. This coffee shop, cafe, all the walls were chalkboards. So they had chalk there, and anyone was allowed to write messages. And all over the walls were like free Palestine, free Gaza, love one, love all. It was a very lovey-dovey San Francisco 1969 band. Peace and flowers, man, that kind of vibe, but in 21st century where peace and flowers to everybody but the people who disagree with our viewpoints on the world. And those people are going to fuck themselves and trip in a pothole and have to walk in a boot the rest of your life. Anyway, so I'm there, I'm vibing, I'm talking to a couple of the comics there, making conversation. A lady there was... she said, "Hey, do you mind if I take a seat next to you?" Go ahead. I don't save seats. I'm not a child. Go ahead. If there's an open seat, you can have it. She sits down. She's got the septic nose ring, which instantly means, she's just annoying. But she was actually a very lovely lady. She says, "Oh, I come in. I started a conversation because I'm trying to have more conversations with strangers. So because I don't have Netflix, I'm making it a goal of mine to be more outgoing. And I do find that life does become more fulfilling when you have conversations with actual people, and especially new people. You get to learn about people and talk shit about them, on verbal graffiti. Anyway, she told me this is her cafe where she goes to study, and she doesn't tell any of her friends or family or anyone in her social circle. She's studying for the MCATs, which means she wants to be a doctor. And I made a joke, well, hey, maybe 5-10 years from now, you can slice me open, have surgery. And she goes, no, actually, I'm going to do internal medicine. And I combated that with, well, isn't that surgery? Like, internal, the medicine you put inside of me? She says, no. You tell me your symptoms, and I tell you what your illness is. And in the back of my head, I thought, well, I've had a lot of those, and none of those doctors have been able to diagnose what my problems are. I did not, put that heaviness on her. But I go, oh, you're going to be a lovely doctor. Small chat. It was fun. I did not get her number. Should have tried. You live and you learn. Anyway. Again, the lady studying for the exam, lovely lady, nothing negative to say about her. I wish her nothing but the best. I hope she becomes an internalist doctor and gets a Nobel Prize and all that. Anyway, the host of this show, who I did have a conversation with, a pleasant lady. She gets on, there wasn't a stage, there was a microphone, all right? So there was a mic stand, a microphone, and a stool right in front of the coffee cafe, like right indoors. She opens up the show, like introducing herself, and then she made a disclaimer. Okay, as I burp, oh, well, what's the disclaimer, B-Man? She goes, I just want to let everybody know, all the performers, there is no hate speech allowed. And immediately, I raised my posture and my eyes squinted, and I'm like, what did I get involved? Like, no hate speech. Like, what am I supposed to talk about if I'm not allowed to hate on anybody? Am I supposed to talk about muffins and Grandpa Smurf, Papa Smurf? Like, I can't. Like, why don't you just cut my balls off right here and make me a eunuch? Like, I can't be funny if I'm not allowed to hate on anybody. So this was very, okay, I'm in a very yuppie room. And there was part of me that was like, to be, man, she is censoring you. Just walk out. Like, don't even perform. Walk out. But again, I had paid for my coffee, my pour over coffee, and I was not done with it. And it was expensive. It was $5.50. So I was going to get my coffee's worth. So I was there. I went from a pleasant environment to immediately I was perturbed. And there was part of me that was like, I'm going nuclear on this room. I'm going in with a grenade. I'm going to do the most offensive, twatty material I could do. I'm going to get banned from this cafe, from this show, and never be allowed here ever again. But something came over me, and I went up there, and I saw it as a challenge. And I went up there, and I did material that, what was that? I don't even remember what I was talking about. If you were there, you would have laughed. It was a funny set. It was okay. It wasn't funny. It was funny, but not funny. But I went up there, and I was very cordial. I did not offend anybody. I did not go in there with a fighter's mentality. I went in there with a love all, come and love all, let's hold hands and hug each other type energy. And I got some laughs. But what was I talking about? I don't want to give my bits away, but it was okay. But I try to avoid doing rooms where there are rules on what can and cannot be discussed when I'm on stage. Because when I have the microphone in my hand and there's live words being thrown back and forth, like I don't like being handicapped with what I can do and what I can't do. Because I want the entire arsenal. All right, the B-Man, I need my entire arsenal to bring the funny, to bring the house down. But I went up there, a eunuch, castrated at, there's no balls, no hatred, just tame, a sugar cookie. a bland muffin without any blueberries in it and got the job done because I'm a professional, barely, comedian. But anyways, and there was another thing that perturbed me as well. After the show, we're in the back, not the green room, but the green area. We're chatting up. We're the host, the one who had told us, hey, no hate speech. I had never seen her before, so I was kind of probing ahead. Where do you do comedy? She's a student at Yale, graduate student. Maybe I shouldn't disclose that. But anyway, we exchanged information, like Instagram. That happens with comics. Like, hey, where do you perform? You change handles, and then, you know, you go about your merry way, and you never look at their handle again. But she had said on stage that she was bisexual, and I was kind of curious. So I went to her Instagram feed, and I'm scrolling through all her photos, and she's been in a relationship with a man. Man, for the last at least 3 or 4 years, like there are photos of them, the two of them. They are clearly an item, but I don't see any other photos with other women that she's with. It's only her boyfriend, which makes me think I don't think this lady is bisexual. I think she's stealing their value to get into that community, to be accepted within the bi LGBTQ plus community. I think she is saying that she is bisexual in name only. What I mean by that is she has a boyfriend. She says she's bisexual so that she can be embraced by the other people who are of different sexualities than the heterosexual dick and P and B hole type sex. So I just got the vibe from talking to her that she's a tree hugger, but she's not bisexual. They squirt gun to my head. I don't think this lady sucks labia. I don't think she'll bury her head and nibble on that beef jerky of those lips. I don't think she'll lick up and down that slit if the option is there. I think she is purely a dick sucker, purely heterosexual, and stealing the value of the bisexuals to be embraced within that community. And that bothers me. No, I'm not part of that community, and I don't even call myself an ally. Like, do you? I do me. You do you. The term ally, like, what is that? I don't even know what that means. Like, I'm love and love all, but I'm not. If you're having a protest on a Saturday afternoon, I'm going to watch football. That's what I'm going to do, right? Hey, I hope it works out for you, but I'm not going to interrupt my life to try to make your life better. And it has nothing to do with your sexuality. It's just that I am self-centered comedian. That's what we are, comedians. But there's a lot of this, and I've brought this up before. There are a lot of people, not just comedians, but there are a lot of women who say they are bisexual so that they can feel like they're an ally or part of that LGBTQ plus community. They can wave that flag. But they're not actually bisexual. They're dick suckers. They're cock suckers. They are not slit lickers. And if I was in that community, like a real member of that community, I would be calling those fake bisexuals out. And I'm doing it right now. Maybe I am an ally for all of you. Because I'm calling bullshit on the bisexual women, especially this one who I don't really think is bisexual at all. So, maybe I am an ally without even knowing it. I'm fighting a fight that needs to be fought that nobody's willing to fight. But again, I'm doing it behind the screen because I don't want to take anyone's to the face, fist that is, or kicks or whatever. But do you feel me? Is it odd that this bothers me? That there are people trying to be part of this LGBT community who are not actually in the community. They just like the vibes, the feelings of that community. And I don't know. I do know, and it bothers me. Keeping it going. All right, we're gonna. If there's anything I need, it's some therapy. But this comes from the subreddit Talk Therapy. My therapist was drunk during our session. I've been seeing my therapist for 7 years. I absolutely adore him. I am so comfortable with him. He has seen and helped me through so many phases of life. I do know some personal information about him. I know he's an alcoholic, but he's been sober for many years. 2.5 years ago, his husband tragically died in front of him. I'm worried about him relapsing before. There wasn't any reason to think he was drinking again. More just a concern for him and all his going through. He lives alone now and does only telehealth work. Our session today was weird. He was slurring, jumping topics without any clear transition, not as involved, saying things that just weren't like him. He would start down a thought path, stop talking, and then change the subject. He was saying things that I don't think he would ever say sober, that I don't think are appropriate responses from a therapist. What do I do? Well, before we go to what you should do, your therapist sounds a lot like me in my openings. I start talking, I have a direction I want to go, I take a left turn, I take a right turn, I have to look at my Google's Maps, how do I get back to where I was, and then I try to form it all together. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. It's dependent upon how much I've had to drink. Right now, B-Man, I've had no alcohol the last, week or two. So, what you need to do, though, back to you, again, B-Man, stop being about yourself. Try to help the people of Reddit. You need to cut ties with your therapist ASAP, right away. And now you have two options after. A, you could go get yourself another therapist, or the more appropriate option would be to find somebody, have a real relationship that you can share your phases of life with, and do so without having to pay for that person's time, for that person to hear you gab about whatever your problems are. This is, we'll get to your therapist's, your concern with him and whether he's using the bottle again or not. But we got to go, before we get to that aspect of the relationship, we need to talk about the relationship you have with your therapist prior to this current incident, your last session. Because this is an inappropriate relationship. It's one that's far too, and maybe that's both of your faults. All right. See, if you've been seeing this therapist of yours for 7.5 years, you should have dropped this therapist of yours 5.5 years ago. You should not see a therapist for more than 2 years, unless you've been molested as a child and or have some severe trauma in your life. If you're just normal depression or whatever shit you're going through, you get 2 years, you work with a therapist, and then you move the fuck on with your life. If your life is still needed of therapy, go find a therapist that can solve your problems in less than 7.5 years. This therapist of yours, he's been there 7.5 years. You still need one. He's not an effective therapist. That's the first. Honestly, if I was your therapist and I was working with you for two years, and I still couldn't figure out the puzzle on how to fix you, I would prescribe narcotics and perhaps a lobotomy. All right, I would not waste another 5.5 years of your life. What also concerns me is that you and your therapist have blurred the professional line. He's supposed to be your therapist, but somewhere along this relationship, he's become more of a friend to you. And that is problematic. Now, to be fair, I have worked with a therapist. I had a therapist, I think, for about a year, maybe a little bit over a year. I talked to this lady once a week for an hour. And I probably, in that time period, I spoke more with her and shared more with her than I had anybody else in my life. And I could fingers, you know, Eagle Scout swear on my grandmother's grave. After a year of working with this lady, I knew nothing. I know nothing about her. All right. We did it virtual on a week, via Zoom or whatever camera program. I don't know where she lived. I mean, that's how little I knew about her. Like she was in her office and there was a window and it was always sunny and we always had very early morning appointments. So I thought she probably lived in California, but why was it sunny? Because if our appointment was at 7 a.m, it should be before sunset in California. So I spent a lot of time thinking about where does this therapist live? But I knew nothing. After a year, if you ask me, I know my therapist's name, and that's all I know. All right? She helped me out, but her personal life, I didn't know if she was an alcoholic. I don't know if she was divorced. I don't know if her husband died. I knew nothing. I know nothing about her. And that, I believe, is how a relationship between a therapist and a John is supposed to work. I'll be this frank with you. I knew so little about my therapist that I don't really know if she was a psychologist or psychiatrist. After a year of paying this lady $75 every week, I still am not positive which of those two she is. And I honestly don't know the difference between the two. That's how much of a dum-dum I am. But that is, hey, she worked with me. We solved some problems. Then I moved the fuck on with my life. And that's what you need to do with this therapist. Now on to his possible alleged drinking. Don't bring it up with his superiors. Do not do that. You've built up enough equity with him, or he's built up enough equity with you, the patient, a 7.5 years or so, that for him to be drunk during one of your therapy sessions, they don't send an email or contact his bosses. Honestly, if you're a boss and you have an employee who's built up enough equity, he's been at an office 5-10 years, and he comes in sloppy drunk, just smelling of gin. His shoe is untied. His button up, the buttons are uneven. He's got the 5 o'clock shadow. He's got the hungover sweats, and you know he's intoxicated. As his boss, you don't fire him. Because he's a good employee, he's been a good soldier, showed up every day, does his work. What you do is, as a boss, you pull him aside and go, hey, I think you might be intoxicated. I'm going to get you an Uber. I'm paying for it. Go home, sober up, come back tomorrow. And then you set up a meeting for the following week to give that John a week to think about what he's going to say. And also, when you have that meeting, probe to see if you can find out if there is actually something, problematic, concerning going on in his personal life. And again, but this guy, this therapist of yours, he's not your friend. I know that's hard for you to hear. Might be tough for you to hear this, but he's not your friend. He enjoys drinking straight from the bottle. Then he enjoys that more so than listening to you whine and moan about how your parents didn't give you enough attention when you were a child and how they loved your brother more than they loved you, right? He's so sick of hearing your shit. You mean 7.5 years he's been working with you and you haven't been fixed yet? Yeah, I'd be drinking from the bottle too if I was your therapist. So what you got to do is just send them an email. Hey, this is over. And be frank. Hey, 7.5 years. I know too much about you. The line has been blurred. Be very honest. I think you may have been intoxicated during our last session. I'm concerned about you. I hope you don't go back to drinking. Hope things work out. But we need to sever this relationship ASAP and go find yourself a new therapist. And the therapist, is there so wrong? Is it so wrong that he's drinking again? Yeah, he'll quit again. That's what they do. If he's that smart, if he's that good at what he does, he'll find another husband. Right? He's a professional. He's got a real job. He likes to drink. He's able to pay his bills. I mean, guys like that. He'll find a husband and he'll get back. He'll get back in the game. But you gotta solve your own shit before you start trying to solve the shit of a drunk widow who's getting drunk on a job. Let's go look at some photos. I don't know what a hemorrhoid is. How about that for an opening? Now, I know of hemorrhoids. I kind of know what a hemorrhoid is, but I have no idea. I know a hemorrhoid has something to do with your anus and your butt cheeks and blood. I'm not sure if it's some type of a blood vessel or a bubble. It bubbles up, bursts, and then you bleed. And I'm not sure if the blood is inside the anus and drips out or if the blood begins outside the anus. And all I know about the hemorrhoid is that there is cream that you can use. I'm not sure if it cures or if it just stops the bleeding temporarily, that you can get over the counter at any drugstore. But again, I've never seen a hemorrhoid. I don't know if I've had a hemorrhoid. I'm pretty sure I have not, because all the people in my life who do have hemorrhoids, they do tell me that, no, if you have a hemorrhoid, you know you have a hemorrhoid. And I don't know that I've ever had a hemorrhoid. Therefore, I'm pretty certain I've never had an actual hemorrhoid. I guess I'm fortunate enough with my anatomy that I'm yet to have one of those. I'm not sure how. It does seem like they're not painful, or so I think. And again, I could very easily look up what a hemorrhoid is on the internet, but I know myself. If I search any illness on the internet, I convince myself that I have that. Even breast cancer. You can't get breast cancer. I look up what a lump looks like. Oh, I got that. But again, I'm a guy. Actually, when I was in high school, the B-man, I had a lump underneath my left nipple. It was very prominent. And I had convinced myself that I had breast cancer. I told my mother about this. My mom told me, no, you don't have breast cancer. You're a guy. You have no boobs. And you have hair on your chest. That is something you do not have to worry about. But I had convinced myself there was like a 3-year period in the early 2000s where the B-man thought he had breast cancer. But actually, I did research that. And it turns out that there are a lot of guys, because when you're a teenager, that is, because of testosterone, puberty, it's almost similar to acne, where just it all, you get clumps over your body. Anyway, yeah, I kind of find it endearing that I you know, middle age, and I don't know what it is. That description I just did, that is my full knowledge of what hemorrhoids are. Like, I honestly don't know if women, I think only guys get hemorrhoids. I'm not. Some of you are laughing at me right now because I don't know much about. Yeah, I don't know. When I poop, like when I sit on the toilet, I spread my cheeks so that I could feel the stretching of my butthole. I do that so in hopes that the poop will just plump out. And it'll make less of a mess on both of my cheeks, which means less wiping I have to do. I am tempted to get a bidet. People keep telling me I need to get one. I guess my poops are too messy for the bidet. Anyway, I do stretch. So sometimes I worry that I'm going to stretch too much, that I'm going to tear apart the asshole even more and, you know, cause a laceration on my butt cheeks, or the butthole. But maybe that's what's prevented me from getting What causes hemorrhoids? I guess that's the question I'm coming at. Is me spreading my butt cheeks wide enough and having to poop bloop, does that help prevent the formation of hemorrhoids? Okay, we're going to move along before this just turns into a circular logic type situation. And this one's a fun one, so let's get to this one. Big dick problems. We don't know, but let's read about someone who does. Cheesy sophomore humor right there. A roommate became rude after seeing my penis. Now, I have been there, but this is about you. I, 19, male, live with three roommates, 24, male, 29, male, and 35, male. So big range of people there, age-wise. All grad students who have lived together for over 3 years. I moved in earlier this year and quickly noticed that the 24, male, and 35-year-old male were often naked around the apartment. I didn't mind, but I'm on the shy side and wasn't comfortable doing the same, especially since I'm shorter and skinnier than them. That makes sense. Things changed when 24-year-old male suddenly stopped being naked and told the others it was because I was always clothed and not making an effort to get closer. So, to fit in, I started easing into it, going from the shower to my room naked, lounging in my underwear, eventually feeling more comfortable. Good for you. But just as I got used to it, the 24-year-old and 35-year-old male started wearing underwear again. When I jokingly asked why, they got defensive, and the 29-year-old, the reasonable one, teased that they felt like I was taunting them with my big dick as payback. Yes, I'm somewhat well endowed for my smaller frame, but I was never showing off. I only did this because they pressured me into it. So what the hell? I love this. I love this. I want to be your fourth roommate. Let me in this apartment. You're Dirk Diggler. There's no going back. All right, the movie Boogie Nights, Dirk Diggler, he takes his wiener out at the porn house. Everybody sees it. Jaws drop, eyes googly. Everyone, boom, 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 whoa, whoa. You're going to be a star, son. You're going to be a movie star. Let's go film some smut with you. That is who you are. Now, no fault of your own, God-given, small frame, huge wiener, porn dick, Dirk Diggler. What you got to do is no gas, all gas, no brakes. There's no going back to being clothed in your apartment, that is. Because it doesn't matter if you put clothes on because your roommates now know what you're working with. Like, even if you walk around the apartment wearing basketball shorts like a normal roommate would, they know you got a penis that can reach the cervix of the deepest vagina in your town. Like, it doesn't matter whether you're clothed or not. They know what you're working with. So why would you put your shorts and your undies back on? And fuck them. Fuck them for their immaturity, their self-doubt about their manhood. They were playing the game, right? They were playing the game of show and tell with their wieners, their peckers, their penises, and then it was all fun and games. It was all lollipops and gumball machines until you came along loitering with your lion of a penis in the living room. But that's not your fault. Like, they started the game. So they shouldn't be allowed to call foul and force you into wearing your undies again. Like, fuck them. You're the big boy in the apartment now. You are the lion. You are the alpha. You may be 19 and you may be paying rent, but you are the landlord and the owner of this apartment. You are the one who dictates the quiet hours, the beginning and the ending of those each night and each morning. You are the one who tells everybody what chores they need to do and by when. You are the one who collects all the rent from them because you got the big dick. You are Dirk Diggler. Now, what I would do if I was you in this apartment, I'm not you. Just look at that away. I have a pedestrian wiener. I'm happy with it. Me and Mr. Perfect, we get along. But I don't have the type of wiener when I expose it to roommates that it makes them scour to the corner and put on their whitey tighties. I do not have that type of wiener. And if I did, you would know. You would know. But what you got to do is all gas, no brakes. You got to lean in to your manhood and let them know. They played games. Well, you're going to give them the game, all right? You are the game, Dirk Diggler. You got to just lean in. You got to be naked. You got to be so abrasive with your nakedness, with your penis, that you force them to move out and have those their rooms sublet. What I would do if I was you, and again, the B-man, I am not you, but I do have your mind. Every time you get home from class or work or whatever it is you do during the day or night, immediately, once you walk in your apartment, you drop your backpack, you drop your pants, and you start doing squats in the living room in front of your roommates. They block the TV. They're watching football. Block the big screen while you're just doing squats and just dip till your penis, the tip, touches the ground. Get back up. Do a set of 50. Do 100. Just right there. Squat. If any of your roommates have a lady over, you know, for a little hanky-panky, and they're in the living room doing a little Netflix and chill, whatever it is they're doing, walk out of your bedroom with naked. Just your big wiener just flowing in the wind. And you go get yourself some chocolate, some double chocolate ice cream from the freezer, and you ask your roommate and his lady, hey, would you like a scoop? I'm making some ice cream. All right, when you're eating dinner together, when you're making a meal together and having dinner with your roommates, do so naked. Toss the salad with your wiener. Stir the tomato sauce with your wiener. Instead of passing your roommate the salt, just tap it with your wiener so it slides across the table. Play. What you can do is make up games called slap the penis, right? Instead of slap the bag of wine, slap the penis. So every time you just slap your penis, anytime you slap your penis on a piece of furniture, on the top of furniture, everybody's got to do a shot of gin or tequila or whatever drink, whiskey, whatever it is you do. And you got to be, you got to fuck with their inadequate, with their self-doubt of their penises, right? Keep your laptop open on the coffee table with the tabs open that show like penis enlargement surgeries, like locations for that. And then you gotta buy penis pumps and leave them all over, like on the floor in the kitchen, and penis pumps and penis and tools that, you know, that stretch your penis out. Like, you gotta every day. Every waking moment you're in the apartment is commandeering their minds to your enormous Dirk Diggler penis. You just never wear clothes. And honestly, if I would always. I prefer to live in a naked apartment than a whitey tighties apartment. I had our friend, Mr. Gigante, the father, right? We had a friend, Joe, his father. We'd go to our house senior year, high school, that is. We'd hang out like downstairs in the basement. His father wore whitey tighties, and he was a big, heavy set guy. It was so awkward. You know, you got, I don't know, 5, 6, you know, high school senior boys hanging out, playing video games, maybe poker, drinking a little bit, and he'd walk around in his underwear like it was nothing. Like that's what they did in their family. And honestly, it was so awkward that it was almost, I'd rather everyone in the family just be naked walking around. That's just a personal preference. I think being fully naked from the waist down is less awkward than every roommate walking around in whitey tighties. But again, I'm a bit of a weirdo, so agree to disagree if that is the case. But no. You own apartment 7B. You are the owner of this three-bedroom apartment. They started the game, but now you are the game. So there's no going back. You cannot put your pants back on. And if they're feeling as though you're taunting them, well, then taunt the fuck out of them. Yeah, who are they to walk around with their pinky pencil dicks? You're a real dick. So don't let them pressure you. And don't let them and their temper tantrum make you put your undies back on. Now, until the end of your lease, you are butt naked in that apartment. A tip of my penis to you, Dirk Diggler. All right, we are going to continue reading A Salesman's Wife by John Lawrence. Okay, we are at top of page 123, and as always, we will read two pages together aloud. "Well, darling," she said happily, "our dear son Garrett is on his way back to state." She gasped when she realized that her husband had company. "Oh, God," Pamela cried in alarm. "It is true. It is." Carlsberg rose from the chair with a fierce scowl on his face. "You fool," he shouted to his wife. "You damn fool." "I'm sorry," Mavis cried, realizing that she had what she had done. "I'm sorry, Justin." "Get out," he thundered. "Get out of here now." Obediently, Mavis retreated and quickly shut the door behind her. Pamela had risen from her chair, clutching her handbag, her eyes glazed with terror as the truth dawned on her with frightening clarity. She had been taken in by Carlsberg. She had been deceived from the start. Carlsberg turned slowly to the patient, trying to recover his dignity after the sudden turn of events. "Pamela," he said in a low, calm voice, "you must understand." "You lied to me," she cried. "It was your son. It was." "Perhaps it was, my dear. But you must understand that he is training. He is going to be a psychologist himself soon. I was simply..." "I don't want to hear you anymore," she groaned. "You tricked me. How could you?" Tears filled her eyes. Blindly, she moved toward the door. She wanted to flee the place, flee and never return. But Carlsberg realized her intention and quickly ran to the door, locked it tightly, and placed the keys in his pocket. "You're not going anywhere," he said coldly, his dark eyes glaring at her fiercely. "Let me out," she shouted. "Please, I've got to go home." "I'm afraid that's out of the question," he replied. "After all, we haven't had our therapy session today." "How can you say that?" she cried. "After what you've done. I don't want to have anything to do with you ever again, ever." She was trembling now, near hysteria, and her hands were frozen in fear. "It's not that easy, my dear," he snarled. "Not by a long shot." He glared at her angrily. She had upset his carefully planned scheme, and it had enraged him. Suddenly, one of his patients had uncovered the truth of his practices, and the shocking force of it threw his mind off balance. His lips curled back cruelly, exposing his flashing white teeth. His eyes narrowed as rage seethed raised within him. He slowly approached her like a lion stalking his prey. Go suck a fat one.